I'm Chris Preston.
And I'm Brad Zimmerman.
And welcome to Street Check, the best podcast in the 50 plus year history of Cabot Wealth Network. I think it's a little better than Carlton Lutz's podcast from 1970. thank you for joining us. Brad, it's Groundhog Day. And I'm happy to report that Punxsutawney Phil, late breaking news here, did not see a shadow, which theoretically means an early spring. However, dating back to 1887, we've been doing this whole thing since 1887, apparently, he has a 39% accuracy rate. So I don't know whether that means maybe we should expect a late spring. Now, as the Punxsutawney Phil of this podcast, Brad, do you have any thoughts?
I'm amazed that a groundhog is still around after 140 years. And early or late spring doesn't really matter. It was like 70 yesterday here. Yeah. I think that's an East Coast thing.
Where are they gauging though this spring? Like, what temperature did it have to hit for people to be like, spring? I mean, in Vermont, I'm the opposite end of that. We don't get spring. It's 6 weeks would be the optimistic view. We don't get spring until maybe mid-April. So
it's like the farmer's almanac of like quaint traditions that should probably just be cast by the wayside. I was not aware it was Groundhog's Day until you brought it up. I have not lost any sleep over my lack of awareness of Groundhog's Day. No. Or the prognostications of a groundhog in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. It's also known as, is it sunny enough for a groundhog or anything to see its shadow day? I think that's literally the determining factor there. Okay, let's move on to the market. Brad, what's the rundown for today?
So Jay Powell came out with his latest commentary. We had the Fed meeting. Rates unchanged. What does that look like going forward? We are in the thick of earnings season. We've had a lot of big responses, notably Meta Platforms reported last night. They're up 20% today. They killed it. And then we also are going to briefly revisit China and see whether we were maybe too optimistic in saying it's a contrarian play. I don't know. I think there's a case to be made there still, but we will get into that in full a little bit later. And then after that, we've got Jacob Mintz of Cabot Option Trader and Option Trader Pro joining us today to talk, in his words, all things options.
All things options, and we'll talk a little market with him as well. Usually options activity that Jacob's seeing can give a clue as to, you know, which way the market winds are blowing. So we'll get to him later. First, Brad, though, it's you're up for Defend the Take, and your take for this week, for which you have 90 seconds, is AI is now in a bubble. Go.
Okay. So bubbles notoriously are hard to diagnose until after they've popped, because otherwise it just looks like really good stock performance or really good sector performance. Hyman Minsky is sort of attributed with identifying five stages of a bubble. He used it to identify credit bubbles, but those were displacement, boom, euphoria, profit taking, and panic. I think AI, just given the Magnificent Seven narrative, the amount of interest on the street in AI, the impetus for everybody to add AI to everything, is sort of laying the groundwork for us being in a classic bubble. The displacement phase, I'm arguing, took place in November of 2022 when ChatGPT hit the scene and sort of connected the dots for a lot of people. After that phase, boom, that's when the early adopters start making profits and start seeing really positive returns. Euphoria is where everybody throws caution to the wind and you're just piling into a name because it's got AI in there. Profit taking, people start exiting, and then the panic phase is when everything sells off. I think we're in the boom phase right now. There was a Bank of America, I believe, note that came out yesterday indicating that the markets were not showing some of the euphoric signals that we would typically see. Some of the earning responses we saw from the companies where people are looking for AI progress have been mixed and not euphoric. So we saw Microsoft come in sort of as expected, and we'll get into that more when we get into the earnings breakdown. But people are still looking for growth. They're not throwing valuation totally out the window. I do think that we're in AI bubble phase. We're not in pets.com phase of the internet bubble quite yet, but I do think that we are in a bubble and that eventually this whole AI craze will settle down.
a few extra seconds, but you know, as Tim Lutz, who you know, longtime Cabot chief investment strategist, used to say, trends last longer than people expect. And that's why I think, while we may, yeah, technically be in a bubble, I feel like it probably will last a while. You know, like you said, it doesn't feel like euphoria at this point. The most euphoric it felt was when it started out, you know, last spring, I guess, spring and summer. And then it kind of died down. And now you're seeing it, you know, now the market has had a nice rally for the last 3 months. AI has definitely been a big part of that, but you know, I don't think we're at, you know, early 2021 EVs or, you know, some of the peaks of Bitcoin levels of euphoria at the moment.
Well, I appreciate the perspective. That is the entire reason that I wanted to bring that up. I had written about this in the Daily a little bit back, but I wanted your sort of real time take on that assessment. I am still in the bubble camp, but just based on your response, it sounds like you're probably pinning us maybe earlier on any kind of prospective bubble. So maybe more in the boom phase before we're at the euphoric highs, which means there's probably still room to run for a lot of these. I mean,
I think so. It was like a year ago that this even started, you know, came on people's radar. You know, for something as big, a trend as big as AI or a mark, you know, industry as big as AI, that's not a long time for people to process things. You know, people need to start seeing, and I guess they already have, but start seeing huge AI related returns on stocks outside of, you know, a few magnificent seven stocks, you know, Microsoft or Nvidia.
So doing my best to sort of recall the late 90s, the early internet bubble age, there was a lot of media coverage discounting the internet as a fad, as something that was you know, inevitably going away. I don't even know that we're at that stage yet. I don't think people have come out yet and started calling AI a fad or dismissed it. I don't know if it's maybe because we're more tech savvy or because technology is a bigger part of our lives, but you know, that from like 96 is when I think Bill Gates was on Letterman and he got roasted for talking about how you could get like sports scores through the internet, and Letterman was like, oh yeah, you can turn on the radio, you can look at the newspaper, and he was getting roasted in like 96, and that was 5 years before internet stocks really, really tumbled. So just on that sort of public perception front, I think maybe we're earlier than I think.
You could potentially call it a bubble, but I, you know, bubbles like trends can last a long time before they pop. Okay, let's move on to our big three, and we'll try and get through these fairly quickly so we can get to Jacob. Number one, Fed. You and I guess this is our chance to take a victory lap. We've been saying for months, ever since, you know, the narrative flipped, and I guess that was the beginning of November when the Fed sort of changed its language and started signaling rate cuts. They're talking about rate cuts in 2024, and the market's been up since then pretty much. But you and I never really thought it would happen as early as the first quarter or March. And now it seems finally, after, you know, the way I figured, you and I both figured it, that Powell would throw some cold water onto this narrative Wednesday. And he did. And now the chances, according to the CME Fed Watch tool, of a rate cut in March is now down to 19.5%. We sat here, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and it was still at 79%, in the 70s at least. And you and I are still like, I don't see it. You know, we get a lot of things wrong, but I think we were right on this one. I guess the question is, the market was down after that meeting, but it's since recovered quickly.
Yeah.
So like how much now are we past the, now that, you know, odds are, you know, people are giving it a fifth of a chance of a cut in March. Do you think the market has already sort of processed that? And there won't be some sort of, will they, won't they overhang for the next 2 months?
I wish I could say yes. Frankly, I looked at that and I was like, okay, well, this is going to be something of an inflection point, and maybe we get into a little bit of a correction or a retracement. I'll be curious when Jacob comes on later what he has to say about all of this. The market Goldilocks scenario is still 6 rate cuts. That's what JP Morgan was calling for. I cited that a few months ago when we were talking about when we did our sort of head-to-head matchup stuff. It's still calling for like 6 rate cuts. That would be a rate cut every meeting for the rest of the year. That doesn't seem feasible to me. FedWatch tool is pricing in the largest allocation of expectation is like 36% going to 5 rate cuts in the rest of the year. So what, it's skip May and then do one every meeting after, or you do one in May and then say you're going to hold and avoid July and then start cutting it. That's still that now that we're actually in this year, that seems a little bit optimistic to me. I'm still probably in that like 3, 4, 5 range. Yeah,
me
for
too.
Cuts.
5 even seems kind of aggressive. If we're not starting till May,
So that if there's less than 6 cuts, or if there's even if there's 5 cuts, we're still looking at a Fed funds rate at 4% at the end of the year, which is not unreasonable, but is probably much higher than the sort of bull thesis is resting on. Rates at 4% are not that materially different from rates at 5.25% as far as the economic impact is concerned. So I do think that we're sort of losing the Goldilocks thread a little bit. I don't know if the exuberance of the rate cut cycle starting is enough to override that, but it still, I think, sets up some uncertainty through the rest of this year, at least.
Yeah. And it just doesn't seem like there's the same panic or fear about that, because we've shifted to will they, won't they cut phase rather than will they, won't they raise again phase. Just the whole feel of the market has changed where, if they sound more hawkish than they did previously for a day, the market will fall for a day or so. But it's not, I don't think it's gonna be something that weighs the market down. Yeah, maybe if they don't do it in like May, then, there might be some more panic that sets in. But for now, I think the fact that it's changed to unlikely that they're gonna start cutting in March, I don't think that's gonna weigh on things too much. Okay, let's shift to number 2. Earnings season, big week this week. A lot of the big tech companies reported. As of through January 31st, so 2 days ago, so through the end of January, total Q4 earnings for the 176 of the S&P 500 members that had reported results up 1.7% for the same quarter a year ago. I think the expected growth rate for the quarter was like 1.3%. So a little, maybe slightly above that, 2.5% or 2.6% higher revenues, 82% beating EPS estimates. What's your takeaway from earnings season so far? About what you expected, better? What do you think?
I'm being surprised by some of the companies that are beating on the upside. I mentioned Meta, it's up 20% today. They reported earnings of $5.33 a share against $4.96 expected. So it's less than a 10% EPS beat. But they also reported that they had doubled margins. I was surprised to learn they have 3 billion monthly active users. I don't know anybody that uses Facebook in their daily lives, but I guess Instagram. But so that user number surprised me. The thing that I'm sort of trying to take away, or that I'm seeing in it, and I think my big takeaway is that shareholders are rewarding the companies that are continuing to set high expectations and delivering, but just delivering is not enough. Microsoft is relatively flat after reporting earnings because their numbers came in roughly as expected. Google down about 6% since they reported. And that's because they had indicated some softness in their ad numbers. I mean, ultimately, Google is just a big ad company. That's where the lion's share of their revenues come from. UPS was one that I had mentioned I was paying attention to a few months ago or a month ago. Fell about 10% after they reported earnings because they'd been able to claw back some of their shipping, but they've still got some. I think they're still about 30% lower than what their shipping volumes would have been had they not run into some of their labor issues. Amazon is actually eating some of their lunch by taking more and more responsibility for the delivery component. Amazon's about 10% of UPS's volumes. AMD, you know, big semiconductor manufacturer, big chip company, they fell slightly after reported earnings. They beat expectations on revenues, but they offered somewhat disappointing guidance for what their revenue numbers are going to look like for some of their chips. I guess expectations had been maybe as much as $8 billion from AI-related chip sales in 2024, and they came in closer to the sort of reasonable expectation of a $2 to $3 billion range. Amazon rose 7% after they reported earnings, and that was another company where, you know, they were showing sort of good numbers across the board, and they're showing it's working and will continue to work. That's like the big takeaway with the Meta margins is, are you delivering on expectations and can you continue beating those expectations going forward? That seems to be the thesis that the market is testing these companies against.
Yeah. And that's why Tesla fell sharply. They beat or missed narrowly, but missed on both top and bottom line for a second straight quarter. And it was punished. Yeah. Mag 7 in particular, if you miss, you know, given how high the bar is for those companies and how far they've run, the stocks have run in the last year plus, if you miss, you're going to get nailed for it. But we're not seeing what we saw, what, two quarters ago, where companies were beating expectations and still getting punished. We're not in that kind of environment anymore.
Yeah, the market knows that a lot of these big tech companies especially are expensive. Everybody knows that these companies are trading at elevated earnings, that the S&P is traded at elevated earnings, and the market is starting to demand that you're going to show a path forward to justify these earnings. One that I wanted to flag, we were talking about the Mag 7. I talked about Amazon having a money switch. They flipped that a couple of days ago, and I sort of speculated that it's a way for them to do higher targeted advertising. In their earnings release, sort of buried deep in it, they are rolling out a sponsored TV offering if you're a U.S. seller. So they remove their ad spend minimums, and then they're offering improving ad capabilities, up to 15 different additional like customer insights, as well as generative AI ads. So Amazon is very much on their way to bespoke advertising, to where if they know that you buy, if you've got kids, Pampers or whatever, and you're watching Prime Video, they can start just rolling out bespoke ad offerings. Like, hey, Brad, looks like you're running low on Pampers. You should probably pick some up. Like, I mean, it's a little bit of a dystopia, but I guess it'll be really effective.
Yeah, when companies do that kind of stuff, it makes me want to reject them more than, go along. It's like, no, you don't know. You don't know. I don't want you prying into my life to that degree. You don't know what I want.
Yeah, we say that, and there was a lot of backlash that Target got. I want to say it was about 10 years ago when they started doing the same thing with mailers. One news story that got a lot of coverage was a teenage girl whose dad found out she was pregnant through Target's targeted advertising, because they were saying, okay, well, if you're buying a pregnancy test and you're buying and you stop buying, you know, sanitary products, then you're probably pregnant. So we're going to start sending you coupons for diapers. And there was a ton of public backlash about that level of tracking. And then we all forgot about it. And the companies just got smarter at tracking. It's not going away. The future is going to look like now, only slightly worse. I mean, that seems to be the direction that we're all heading. But Amazon seems to be doing it right. Right. If you're going to bank on there being one company that exists, Bruce sort of threw that out as a joke in one of his issues a few months ago, saying like, oh, well, if it's just seven stocks driving everything, what's going to happen? We're just going to all own one stock and that'll be it. Yeah, maybe. And if that's the future we're looking towards, Amazon's not a bad bet for like the one monolithic company that remains.
Yeah.
So buy Amazon, I guess.
Buy Amazon. There we go. It could use the help. I think our audience might be just the boost that they need. All right, let's shift to our last item, China. Chinese stocks continue to get hammered. I think they're down about 6% in January. And now Evergrande, I think I'm pronouncing that right, ordered to liquidate. We've both been on here and said buy China, but contrarian play, buy China, and it just keeps falling. So the last couple of months we've been wrong. I still have a hard time believing that China, there isn't some big recovery here for China, or at least Chinese stocks. It's just a matter of when. What are your thoughts? Are you less bullish on China as a contrarian play, just given the beating they've taken? I mean, in October, when we sat here and the market had been taking a beating, U.S. stocks had been taking a beating for close to 2 years, and we thought that the turnaround was coming, and turned out there was. Now China's a different beast, but I still am of the belief that a year from now Chinese stocks will be higher.
I think the big takeaway is if you are a contrarian investor, you don't pay attention to momentum.
Right.
You look at fundamentals, because by its nature, a contrarian investor, you're saying, hey, the market is wrong about this investment. They're not valuing it appropriately. They're selling shares at a discount to where fundamentally they should be trading. As of right now, the Chinese CSI index is trading at 10 times forward earnings. Chinese stocks have doubled in like the last decade, whereas U.S. stocks are up like four times, or maybe it's the last 20 years. I don't remember. I'd seen a statistic, which I should have cited, but did not. Beijing did roll out a little bit of a crackdown on short selling. So they're limiting the ability to lend shares for shorting on certain restricted stocks during certain windows. So they're trying to stop the bleeding there. You mentioned Evergrande liquidation. That's still the overhang, is like the shadow lending sector and the property sector are this big sort of sword of Damocles that are sort of hanging over the head of the Chinese economy. But if you're looking for a contrarian play, you're not looking at that momentum. If the stocks are down another 6% in January, well, now they're just cheaper.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's a needle threader that you could do where it's like
green shoots. That's what Larry Chung kept saying, green shoots. And Pinduoduo was one he said, sort of the up and coming e-commerce play there. And sure enough, it's been down in the last month. But if you'd bought after he said buy PDD on our podcast, what was it, like September, October?
Something like that.
It's up quite a bit. So there's been, green shoots or pockets of China where, you've actually been able to make money. And I think, eventually there'll be more of those.
Yeah, maybe identify the babies that are getting thrown out with the bathwater is the way to go. Look for companies that are not particularly leveraged to the strength of the Chinese economy, but that are doing what China does well as an economy. And, conversely, if somebody like a BYD starts selling in the global South, starts selling in Europe, maybe even if China starts making headways and offering some lower cost EVs in the US, right? Like that strikes me as a very smart contrarian play. You take the China risk for that opportunity and for the fact that others are not willing to do it. Would I buy a Chinese ETF right now? No. I think you look for pockets of strength that are unfairly being discounted with the US aversion to being invested in anything China right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. Okay, let's move on to our guest for today. He is, as we've mentioned, Jacob Mintz, our options trading extraordinaire here at Cabot Wealth, who runs Cabot Options Trader, Cabot Options Trader Pro, Cabot Profit Booster. Jacob, welcome to your favorite podcast.
Thank you, guys. You're at least in the top 5 to 10 for sure.
and just to confirm, you listen to 5 to 10 usually, right?
Exactly.
We wanted to have you on. We've had you on a couple times when the market had just turned bullish. I think you and Mike came on. It was both with Mike Santola both times. Came on last summer when things were bullish, but it was a little thin. And then I think you kind of come on around the beginning of November when you know this the current bull rally is was getting going, or maybe it was sometime in November. What are you seeing now in the options market? Like, I know you at one point you were a little concerned about junk stocks getting bought up, that being sort of a yellow flag for the market. Are you still seeing that? Are you seeing exuberance? What are you seeing?
In terms of the junk stock rally, it's kind of faded off. It's, you know, for better or worse, it's been the Mag 7 again. It's NVIDIA and yep. The newer ones like Super Microcomputer and AMD. So that's really where the hot money is at. If I were to say I have a concern right now, and I am pretty bullish, it's the regional banks. They've come under a lot of pressure this week. I think it was New York Central Bank, symbol NYCB, was down 40% at some point this week. All the regional banks kind of fell with it. The KRE, the regional bank ETF, was down, I don't know, somewhere between 7 and 10% for 2 days. So that'd be my big concern right now. But I got to say, the market's been handling this news really, really well. You know, last year, when the regional banks fell apart, the market tanked.
Right.
This year, regional banks fell, and the market fell for like half a day, and now we're right back towards near all-time highs. So that's a pretty encouraging sign to see the market handle such, you know, such an important sector come under such pressure and kind of shrug it off.
Yeah. Are you seeing like maybe a lower perception of a risk of contagion? You know, I think we all are at least sort of intuitively aware that commercial lending is problematic right now. Everybody's sort of seeing their downtowns hollow out a little bit. People push the suburbs. Everybody knows that there's risk in commercial lending and that's a sort of, I've heard it called a slow moving train wreck out through 2027, given the maturities on a lot of these commercial loans. Is the fact that it's sort of widely known, is that maybe priced in, or is there just maybe lower risk of contagion?
That's above my pay grade as usual, Brad. I just follow the trend of the market in general.
Number go up, right?
I will say, I try to keep it as simple as possible, right?
Yep.
The market's handling the news really well. The one concern, though, is, and other than those regional banks falling, is option activity in that sector has turned pretty bearish. So there's put buying in the KRE, the regional bank ETF, in Zion Bancorp, symbol ZION. Blackstone, which has, you know, a big real estate type play, huge put buying yesterday. So, you know, I'm just trying to follow the flows of the market, both in terms of, you know, where the market's going, as well as option activity in that sector. So, you know, I'll leave the 2027 debt concerns to people that are way smarter than myself.
So what expiries were you seeing with the put buying in the regional banks?
Now, that's a good question, Brad. Now you're talking my language. it's really across the board. So it is in super short-term stuff like February, March, April, some September stuff. So it's definitely concerning. That being said, you know, it's concerning until it's not. And with the market back at all-time, you know, right near all-time highs, it's a yellow flag, but, you know, I'm thinking about adding exposure to the Cabot Options Trader portfolio today. I bought a position in the Jacobs Private Circle portfolio today. So until that yellow flag turns into a red flag, I'm going to keep pushing forward with the bull market run.
And are there, you know, you mentioned banks being sort of the yellow flag. Are there sectors, is it really just the Mag 7 that are kind of the... where you're seeing the most, you know, bullish activity, or is there sort of offshoots from that?
It's pretty much everywhere, to be honest. Okay. It's not, you know, it's not gangbusters out there, but it's spread out. So today there's call buying in Marvell Semiconductor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of bullish activity in semiconductors. There's bullish activity in Trade Desk, which is, you know, like I believe it's a advertising type play, probably something to do with the Meta numbers, if I'm getting that right. It's just kind of everywhere. You know, the most interesting option activity the last couple of days has been in that Super Microcomputer, that SMCI,
yeah,
which I bought for the Jacobs Private Circle folks at around like $50 or $60. And I rode it all the way to 75. And now it's trading at 500 or, you know, wherever it is. So, you know, I got it right, but I got out way too soon. They're buying calls at the 700 strike. They're buying calls in NVIDIA at the 1,000 strike. I mean, it is just, they are really, really going after these AI offshoot plays. Vertiv, symbol V, I'm not sure if I'm saying
that. VRTV, right. I think. VRTV.
VRT, symbol VRT. Big call buying. I have a position in that. And they just keep buying the stocks up and up and up and up. And they just keep buying calls. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of momentum in these AI type plays. I, you know, Brad was saying he thinks it's, you know, kind of maybe a bubble. It certainly could be. But I could tell you that the big options traders are gunning these things, looking for much higher prices in the months to come.
1,000 strike on NVIDIA seems insane to me. Like, as soon as you said that, I wanted to call back to like our conversation earlier, where it's like that seems like bubble levels to me, where you're totally disregarding valuation and you're not looking at the fundamentals at all. But I mean, that's not universal. That's a company that's been really dominant for a year and that's still leading the way, and that has really low CapEx just because of the nature of its business. They can justify a much higher valuation because they're not doing most of the manufacturing. They're just creating products, and they're creating the architecture and then licensing most of that out. I think something like 2/3 of their revenue is not reliant on the actual production of chips. And most of that's done by like TSMC. So, you know, maybe that makes a case for looking for other value plays in that trade, somebody like a Taiwan Semi.
You know what? All I can say, Brad, is when the stock went from 250 to 300, we probably could have said it was overvalued then. And now, you know, look at it now. Same thing with Supermicro. I mean, you know, these trends, the Cabot mantra is these trends can go on much longer than you could ever possibly imagine. And maybe we're in that cycle. I wrote, I don't know, maybe about 2 or 3 weeks ago, was, you know, looking at some of these numbers, and I am not a numbers guy, it's possible that we are at the start of a super cycle of spending in the AI related place. I mean, SMCI basically said, we can't make enough. I mean, we just keep hearing that from, you know, those type of plays. So, you know, it's possible that this is just the start, and it could be a boom, you know, for the economy and the market. I don't know. That's above my pay grade, but the way these stocks are moving, the numbers they're reporting, it's very possible.
You know,
Go ahead, Chris. Well, I mentioned to you, Brad, a little earlier, we're like a year into AI being like this mainstream thing that's, you know, or that's more than just a, you know, some sort of idea. ChatGPT brought it into the mainstream, I think, November 2022. And even then, you know, it didn't become an investment play that people really talked about much until what, like last spring, you know, and it did carry the market through the spring and early summer last year. And then sort of, you know, died down a bit. And now it's sort of coming back to life in a big way with stocks like SMCI. That's not that long for, you know, for the bubble to burst already, to me. I think you might be right that we might be in the early innings of a rally.
Well, the thing that it made me think of, you know, you and I have been talking for the better part of a year about how much the economy has been leaning on the consumer. And, you know, what Jacob's talking about with like, okay, well, we might be entering a new super cycle for business spending on tech. That seems like a baton pass to me. You know, if we are really getting into a sectarian bull market, right? Like if we're getting into like a major bull market, a handoff from the consumer who's been carrying us for the better part of a year and a half now, to business spending seems like a pretty reasonable way to shift some of the burden of justifying some of these higher stock prices.
Yeah, I will say I do have AI plays in all my portfolios. Some are working, some, you know, I own VRT in one portfolio. You know, have ARM Holdings, Marvel, these type of plays, Snap. I will say it does see, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I don't want to necessarily own NVIDIA and SMCI and Vert. And because at some point, yes, there will be some shakeup in this group. So, you know, I'm looking to add, the, you know, a stock like American Express. You know, there are stocks that are outside of AI that are working, that are breaking out on earnings. American Express. IBM, while not sexy for a long time, looks great. Textron, which is like an arrow, you know, a plane type play. I mean, I got such a diverse list of stocks that are breaking up. That's when my list of potential buy candidates just keeps growing and growing, and it's diverse like it is right now. It's a pretty bullish sign, you know, and obviously the market making new all-time highs is always a bullish sign.
Yeah. We talked about Fed earlier. We reserved the macro talk for before you get on, Jacob, even though I know you love it. But you, along with us, had been very skeptical. I know just from reading your issues, have been very skeptical that the Fed would start cutting rates as early as March. And it seems like we're pretty validated here after what Powell, you know, Powell's tone from the other day. I guess what made you skeptical there? And do you think, how much do you think it actually matters, whether it's in March or May or even later?
Yeah, so I will say I've written so many times that I don't believe that the Fed will be cutting interest rates in March. I started to be like, God, I'm really putting my neck on the line. Not that anybody really cares what I'm saying about the Fed, but I've been pretty vocal that I seriously doubt that will happen. That being said, it certainly can. The only way I can see it happen is if the economy really falls apart. And I just don't see that happening with, you know, jobs number today was big. Consumer confidence was at the highest levels this morning since 2021. I mean, the economy is not falling apart. That being said, every single day, this Fed stuff changes. You know, on Tuesday or on Wednesday, Powell says we're, you know, unlikely to cut in March. And then the next day it's, well, regional banks are in trouble, so we're going to have to cut. And now today, you know, the jobs data is strong, so we're going to not cut. It just goes back. It doesn't really matter. I mean, we can just, you know, talk ourselves into a corner. Just every single day, it's a different story. Just follow the trend of the market. Just follow where stocks are going. And nobody's going to care if they cut in March or if they don't cut in March and they do it in June versus July. It doesn't matter, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it sounds like Chris sort of hit the nail on the head with the, all right, well, the sentiment has shifted now. It's no longer, is the Fed going to remain a problem? It's how quickly do they get out of the way? Is like, you know, maybe some short-term consideration. We saw the one-day sell-off that was quickly reversed in the next 2 days, right? So I do think that the sentiment shift is probably overriding any kind of anything that might have you being pedantic about the timing of rate cuts, you know, which is my area of expertise, being pedantic.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look up pedantic when we get off the call.
That's Brad's word of the day for you. Jacob, before we let you go, I know you have a webinar, free webinar, next Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern. The title is Three Winning Trading Strategies for 2024. Do you want to just touch briefly on what you plan on talking about for people who might want to join?
Well, that means that I should start working on this presentation and to get ready for it.
You're in good shape.
Okay, good, good. What I'm really going to do is I'm going to break down three of my best trades I've had at Cabot over my nearly decade long time here and how I found those trades. The short answer is buy strong stocks in a strong market that are attracting bullish option activity. But I'm going to really break down, you know, how I find those types of setups and, you know, using my past winning trades to find those trades. But at the end of the day, another key point I'm going to make on the presentation is, you know, just have a process. Don't get shook out by the Fed. You know, if all the signals are lined up, like I just mentioned, don't worry about what the Fed is saying on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Just stick to the system. If the trade works, it works. It could be, you know, a home run. If it doesn't, then you'll just cut bait and move on. But yeah, just follow the trend of the market. Don't worry about Meta's revenue numbers. Sorry, Brad. And just if the stock's going up and option activity is strong, it's time to get in.
And yeah, so that'll be next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. We'll put a link where people can sign up in the for people who are watching this on YouTube. We'll put a link there in the blurb below. One last thing before you go. So a lot of the strategies that you'll be talking about on that webinar, and you know, you've talked about a lot before, you learned the Chicago Board of Options Trading floor as a market maker. I don't think we've ever asked you to tell any of your trading floor stories on this podcast. Any good ones that are shareable for a PG-13 audience?
No. Now you kind of put me in a corner to find a PG story.
The one, tell about the one. Was the your boss and his the secretary? There was a fight or something. Got involved.
Sure. So when I came down to the floor, the first thing you do is you become a clerk. So I graduated college and I got the job to be a clerk with the understanding that I would someday be a trader. So I was standing with next to my boss, who was a maniac, like a total maniac. He would
fly off. He watches this podcast. Sorry.
What's that?
He watches this podcast.
So yeah, right. he would just yell and scream and fight all the time, just for no reason. One day he got in a fight with another trader in the group, or I'm sorry, in the trading crowd, somebody he was competing against. And the other clerk that was working with me and who had been working with this gentleman for many years, she was probably, I don't know, 4'10" and weighed about 75 pounds. And so she and I were just watching this go on, and they're in a fist fight and they're rolling on the ground. And the other guy, the other trader, gets on top of my boss and is just wailing on him. Well, the clerk, the young woman, super small, squeaky talking young lady, picks up an old monitor, back in the day when they were like this big, not like this, not like they are now, yeah. Picked it up and bashed it over the head of the guy that was beating up my boss. So, and that was
pretty that much work?
That was pretty much the end of the fight.
End of the fight, yeah.
Yeah, and at which point my boss walked across the street, went to the bank, and took out, I don't remember what it was, $2,500, $5,000 of cash and handed it to her. And that was her, that was a bonus for the day.
Nice. Well worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I can't say I've been on a trading floor like that, or well, trading floor period, but wow, that's, that story has always stuck with me when you've told
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's similar to the way things are used to be at the Cabot office.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, we usually ask Madison, our producer, to jump in. Jacob, thanks for joining us. And again, you can catch his webinar next Wednesday, 2:00. Hopefully next time, it seems like every time we have you on, it's during, it portends good things for the market. So hopefully that'll continue to be the case. And anytime the market's down, maybe we'll just have you on to see if we can change the trend. But no, thanks for joining us.
Have to keep his record pristine. So we only bring him on when things look good. When things are bad, it's just me and you, Chris.
That's true. Yeah.
Bring on the guy who
we
looks
can't
good.
Find guests. What's that?
You bring on the guy that looks good when the market's
exactly. Good. Yeah. At least to the audio only people. thank you for joining Street Check, and we'll be back next Friday with our next episode.